Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's gonna hate you, and she's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nature Bat's Last Radio Show. I'm Pauline Schneider in New York, and this is the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. Today, our show is live, and I'll be talking with Guy and Paul Marcotte, checking in from the Pacific Northwest Tour. Our theme song is provided as a gift by AfroZen, and you can find more of his work on SoundCloud. We have a very special guest today, as I mentioned, Paul Marcotte, who is international house and pet sitter. And he is right now acting as the personal assistant for Guy on this Pacific Northwest tour. And I want to say hello to both of you. Guy and Paul, are you there now? Can we hear you?
Yes, thank you, Pauline, for hosting today. We appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Pauline.
Hi.
Happy to be here.
This is great. I feel like I should really be guest hosting, and Guy should be running this. So it's a little bit, it's awkward.
Apparently, I create awkwardness everywhere I go. So this shouldn't be any different than usual.
Dr. Doom and the King of Awkward.
Yeah, you don't know the half of it.
No. Well, maybe we'll hear a little bit about that, Paul. How's that going right now? Already? All right, that's our show for today.
I think we have a sketchy connection here. I don't know what's going wrong.
We do. Apparently, it's all very sketchy. So, Paul, what were you thinking when you first were invited to join this, be a personal assistant to Guy?
Well, a temporary moment of insanity, I think, is what it was. No, I just had this thought. It all started off with the fact that, you know, Guy with having the pulmonary embolism and having somebody help him out on the European tour, and I had some time off during this period in between dogs and cats and pet sits. So I just thought I'll send an email to Guy and find out if he'd like to have a personal assistant, not knowing whether he wanted one or not. And he said yes, so it's all sort of started from there. And it's been absolutely magnificent. There's been a lot of, in spite of the message that Guy spreads, him and I have had it's been a fun trip. From my point of view, I won't put words into his mouth, but I think it's been wonderful. So we made some great, you know, met some great people, nice people along the way, and Guy and I seem to laugh a lot, so that's a wonderful thing.
That's great. I hear five times.
Oh, you cut out there.
Is this true? You've only been fired five times. Is this?
Yeah.
Correct?
So my volunteer pay has gone from zero down to, I think by the time the tour is over with, I'm going to have to pay him money. But oh well. I got to get to zero on my money scale one day, so maybe just be a little bit earlier now.
There you go. Guy, how's it working out? How are you feeling? How's your health? How's your stamina? How are you holding up there?
Health is good. I've gained about 10 pounds because of the ice cream factor. Everybody seems to be facilitating my ice cream addiction.
That's great. Well, you make a point of loving ice cream and cookies.
Do what you love. I love to eat ice cream.
That's great. Of course. Yeah. Of course.
So I'm being well fed. You know, sometimes on these tours, a meal gets skipped now and then and sort of keeps me back in balance with respect to my weight. But this time, there not only have not been any meals missed, but there's been extra meals now and then. In fact, Paul has a story I'm sure he'd love to tell you about when we left our hostess Jean in Bremerton and caught the ferry to come to wherever it is we went to next, and I can barely even remember.
And then we got to Tacoma after that.
Tacoma, right. The personal assistant keeps track of not only where we are, but where we've been.
Yes, exactly. But we had to stop. We stopped at a restaurant, and if you just give me 2 seconds here, we stopped at a breakfast spot called Little Jerry's. I think this is where Guy was going with this story.
Yeah, Little Jerry's, so, and it's a Seinfeld schematic place for the whole thing. Yeah.
Yes, nice. And they had all kinds of interesting things. I'd never heard of chicken fried steak, and it makes me sick to even think about it. But anyway, two of the people that were at the breakfast.
You've never heard of chicken fried steak?
That's what they all said.
You've never been to Texas, huh?
No, I've never been to Texas, and I've never heard of chicken fried snake. Snake, or steak. Probably snake in Texas. But,
tastes so like they chicken. Had that.
Yeah, and they called it country fried steak, but it's still the same thing. You never heard of that either.
No, but that wasn't the best thing on the menu. The best thing on the menu was the schmoopy. Do you know what a schmoopy is, Pauline?
I do now, only because Guy told me the other day.
Oh, okay.
But, well, for the but rest tell of us, the, tell the, tell our listeners.
For the rest of the three people that are listening out there, right. The schmoopy is a deep-fried Twinkie topped with seasonal berries, whipped cream, and slivered almonds. So, and it's only $8.95. So, mm-mm-mm.
Wow.
But nobody sounds... ordered that. Guy was thinking that afterwards that he should have ordered it so we could all share in the joy of a deep-fried Twinkie, but it just didn't really seem to be the kind of breakfast that I'd want to participate in. So, yeah.
Oh, it sounds pretty awful, actually. I can't imagine that.
And then, I don't know if you remember when we started this story, but it was about you, Paul, and Jean dropping me at the ferry after that big breakfast.
Oh, yeah. So now this is, I see this is on Facebook. So Jean takes us to the ferry terminal. So we're getting our timeline a bit mixed up here. But anyway, Jean takes us to the ferry terminal because we're heading back to Bremerton. Jean and I, Guy's going over to Bainbridge Island. And, his ferry's leaving before ours, so we drop him off, tell him where to go up to the gate and buy his ticket. Jean and I park the car in the ferry lineup, and then Jean says, well, we've got a bit of time before Guy's ferry leaves, so why don't we just go up there and have a bit of a visit? So we thought, okay. So we walked up to the ferry terminal and walk around the corner and caught him out because we just had this big breakfast, and here he is with an ice cream cone in his hand. So busted in the ferry terminal eating ice cream after his.
I thought they were gone.
That's our guy.
You know, and this is America, so you don't get punished for committing a crime. You get punished for being caught committing a crime. It was a completely different thing.
you were telling me that was it yesterday? You were picking a bunch of berries and putting them on your ice cream.
Yes, we found a.
That's great.
Yeah, we found a bunch of berry bushes in somebody's garden, and oh, caught again. And some of the vines were hanging over their property line and onto public property, onto the right of way. And of course, there's a concept rooted in English common law that says if the fruit is overhanging public property, it's what's called usufruct, U-S-U-F-R-U-C-T. And that means that anybody walking along can take that fruit. It's in the commons. So we harvested a bunch of what are locally known as black caps, luscious little berries.
Oh, my God.
And put them on our ice cream. It was quite superb.
Because there wasn't that many. There still was quite a few. That was yesterday. But there wasn't as many as there would have been because Guy and I pigged out on these fruit the day before when we were walking down the street. So.
Yeah, so we got to use them twice, the day before yesterday when we harvested almost all of them. And then again yesterday when we harvested the remaining ones.
Oh, my God.
Now, we knew we were in the right because of this law that Guy just explained, and we know that everything so follows the rule of law in this country. So
right. You're so protected by the rule of law. We're all so very well protected by that.
Yeah, exactly.
We keep learning that.
Yeah, but you see, I'm immune because I'm this lonely Canuck down here in U.S. of A., so they won't bother me, right?
No.
Right.
Yeah, no, not at all. So, Paul, how did you, you've got an interesting past, and you know, then you became the sort of house pet surfing dude. All of you travel the world. You get to travel the world. It's amazing. And you don't have property taxes to pay. Or you don't even have to own a house. I mean, it's wonderful. How did you pull that off?
Well, I guess I've been a bit of a wanderer. You know, I think this got brought up once before at Nature Bats Last, but I've kind of had this wandering thing going on since the 70s. And then, you know, when my last paid employment was in Vancouver, which I quit the same year the guy quit, I quit on January 27th at a job that I really loved, right, driving a little ferry boat. And because by then I just thought, I don't want to be in a city anymore. And I think that things are falling apart on so many fronts. So I just decided to leave paid employment and then start doing, I'd been doing the pet sitting thing for quite a few years at that point, just part-time, and living on my sailboat. And I was getting so many house sit gigs. This is in 2011. I just thought, I'm spending $600 a month to live on my sailboat and I'm never there. So that seems like a waste of money. So instead of doing that, I just sold the boat and have just been wandering around going from pet sit to pet sit since then. And it's been wonderful, but it will come to an end as well. Like everything's going to come to an end. But, in the meantime, it's been, it's a very relaxed existence. As a matter of fact, I even get time to have an afternoon nap, but I haven't had an afternoon nap for the last week and a half.
Why is that?
Well, you know, there's so much to do as a personal assistant. It doesn't fit into the schedule here, so there's some overdue nap time coming up. So.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, my God.
It is kind of surprising how much time is taken up by, you know, attending to my concerns. And of course, I'm working all the time, seemingly, as well. Mm-hmm. People think that when I have a day off, we're just sitting around eating ice cream and picking berries to put on the ice cream. Oh, wait, that is what we do.
That's right.
But there's actually quite a bit of work going on as well. Not only is it time-consuming just to live, as we all know, to sort of take care of the basic necessities, but then I have these couple hundred email messages coming in every 20 minutes and phone calls and interviews and so on. And if it weren't for Paul, I would have no idea where we're going next, and what time we're leaving, and when we're supposed to get there, and who we're staying with, and all that.
Yeah.
So it's been great having somebody do all that sort of technical, detail-oriented kinds of things, handy with his spreadsheet as always. So it's working great.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, those of us who know you and work with you, we know how hard you work, and you also keep us working hard. A day doesn't go by where you and I don't speak two or three times, and we're, you know, I'm writing a letter somewhere and trying to make a video, getting ready for the radio show, whatever. It's just, you know, it's amazing the amount of work that you do and what you produce on a weekly basis. It's pretty staggering. I mean, you're it's not that you're just constantly writing and reading all this information and digesting it for us, but you're creating new product, so to speak, for people to be able to, you know, put their teeth into and better grasp what's going on around us. And I don't even know how you have time for a tour.
Well, it certainly adds a certain level of busyness to the whole thing, being on tour. Unfortunately, I have relatively committed people like you and Ivy, a videographer who's going to meet us in a few days in Portland and shoot some video. And it's one of the amazing things about these times is that there is plenty of opportunity for people to shoot video. So, I think I've posted two presentations already from this tour, and I think I've only done five or something like that. One of them showed up the very next day. The one from Bainbridge Island was ready and posted the following day. So, you know, because we have this technology, we can take advantage of it and try to get the word out as quickly as possible. And I have this great group of people who are committed to working with me for the same price I work for, which is nothing.
Or negative nothing.
Yeah. Right. No one's getting rich here. Despite all the comments to the contrary.
Right.
Oh, man. So Guy, this has been a very well-organized tour this far. And who's your tour organizer? And can you tell us a little bit about her?
Yeah, she's done an absolutely spectacular job. Robin Wagner of Crawford's Attractions has organized the whole thing. And I just said goodbye to her a few minutes ago, right before we started the show. I think even she was surprised at how much effort this was, how many people were involved, keeping track of it all. And she used to book regularly for her band, so she knows what it takes. She's known what it takes for a long time to hold a tour like this together. That's done a really marvelous job. And every time another thing comes up, and they come up all the time, it seems, I just forward a message to her and boom, she takes care of it in short order.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Yeah, she really has done a great job. And she has spent the last couple of days with us off and on, in participating in the consumption of ice cream and berries, you know, the important stuff.
Of course.
And it's back to work for her.
Oh, that's great. That's pretty awesome.
I just like to add, just on what you were saying earlier, Pauline, about Guy's work, because it's amazing how much work that he does, and you really don't appreciate that until you're in close contact with him. And so he said, I'm never going to own a smartphone, and I'm even more convinced now that I'm not going to own a smartphone. He's interrupted by it on a regular basis. But the advantage, as Guy is saying, is that at least he doesn't have to deal with all these messages and things right at the end of the day. You can sort of filter through them as the day goes by. So yeah, he's been working very hard. I don't think I've been doing too much, but I even missed giving him glasses of water to drink. Aww. when he's.
I just lost you. I don't know if you can hear me. If you could repeat that.
So far, so good. So far, so good. He's still alive.
I haven't keeled over yet.
He's just like the pets that I sit. I assume that once the pet sits over, if the animal is still alive, then I've done my job. And so far, he's still breathing. So I've only got a few more days to go.
That's right. How much longer is this tour, Guy, and where are you going next?
Well, good news about where I'm going next. Not good news that the tour ends this coming Sunday, but good news that Paul is going to accompany on the plane and spend a few days at the Mud Hut.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great.
You know, the first time Paul showed up, and he'll give you the exact date here in a minute because he has a memory for that sort of thing. First time he showed up, he thought it would be the last. He thought it would be the only opportunity to visit, and this will be his fifth visit now. So apparently he can't get enough of this stuff.
Extinction is not coming fast enough.
No, I have somebody to blame. So if Mike, if you're listening to this program, it's your fault. Because the second time I was there, I said, well, Mike, goodbye. I don't know if I'll be seeing you again. He says, oh, you'll be back. So it's Mike's leave his fault. So thanks, Mike.
Mike is the only regular host who's missing from this program.
Yeah. I know. We should do a triple host one day.
Yes, yes, we ought to, with Paul Marcotte, of course.
Yes, of course. Well, how long are you staying out there, Paul? And who are you guys hosting next week on the show?
Well, I've just booked a ticket this morning, so I'm obviously flying with Guy to the Mud Hut, not all the way to the Mud Hut, but
to Tucson.
And then I've got a ticket coming back on the 3rd of July back to Portland. So, yeah, so that's going to be my little journey. So, yeah, it should be good. And Guy's asked me to drive from Tucson to the Mud Hut, but I said, well, we drive at the speed that I drive compared to the way he drives. We might end up getting there in his liking, but anyway, we'll see. He can get some work done. Even though the tour is over, I can still do some personal assistance stuff by driving down the freeway at a normal speed, not a guy's speed.
And all those of us who care about Guy very much appreciate that. And We've heard some horror stories, so from you, Paul. We've heard horror stories from you.
I've been in the story, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think I remember one particular time, and it includes ice cream.
It does. Wasn't
he driving with one finger on the? I don't know. He was talking on the phone and with the other hand holding an ice cream cone and driving with his elbows or something.
No, I think wasn't actually driving with the elbows. I think he was using his knees to steer. Oh. And then we had to go past a semi. So we have to pass the semi while he's eating the ice cream and talking on the phone and driving with his knees. I don't know how fast we were going, but
you guys may have forgotten this, but my wife is listening.
Okay, so
you can just tone it back a little bit.
It was all in control, Sheila. Everything was fine. We're still here.
Sorry.
I'll drive him back. You can relax.
Yes, he'll be safe. He'll be safe this time.
To answer your question, Pauline, Mike and I are interviewing Cindy Sheehan next week on the radio show.
That's fantastic. Yes. Yeah.
So something of a big name.
She's a hero of mine.
Yeah. I mean, an early protester against the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And she's joined by a lot of people who are protesting the wars now, but clearly not nearly enough.
Well, we know how well protests against wars work.
Yes. And it's interesting, this subject comes up now and then in my presentations, and I've explicitly included it in the last couple of presentations, the notion that this is an empire. This is American empire, and what imperialism requires is obedience at home, oppression abroad, and whole-scale destruction of the living planet. And people who are in the empire have these enormous privileges that they're mostly unaware of or unwilling to admit. Like you flip a switch and the light comes on. You flip a lever and water comes through the taps every single time. And there's so much food in this country, we actually throw away a third of it without even touching it, without trying to consume it. And so the notion of imperialism comes up pretty frequently. And I think it's surprising to people who are embedded within this culture because they never knew. They never noticed that brown people are dying for them. They mm-hmm. never noticed that we're destroying the living planet. They never noticed that their obedience is required because they've been so obedient this whole time they didn't need to notice.
That's so true. Yeah, astonishingly, you know, I always hear people say our country is becoming more lawless and more unruly, but really we're an amazingly obedient country. Despite, you know, traffic tickets here and there, we really, you know, we toe the line when authority tells us what to do. We just do it. We get in line. We wait patiently. And I mean, really, I'm of Greek heritage. And, you know, what's going on in Greece right now, it's this is a group of people that they don't like being told anything. And they never really have. But the reason is because they were enslaved for 400 years. And, you know, so when I moved here, I was astounded by the fact that people just sort of walked around quietly obeying laws that were so offensive to basic human rights. And there was no political graffiti anywhere. Really, none. And no one was actively protesting things. Really, nowhere. Nothing was really going on. Once in a while, we have like a big march on the mall. You know, we get together and we'd say, you know, keep women's rights. And in our communities, that wasn't really happening. I see more now than I did, you know, the 30-some years ago that I moved back to the States. We are very obedient. And interestingly, you know, maybe we can't stop wars and we can't march against wars effectively to stop them, but we can try to educate young people not to enlist. And I think that's a really critical thing. I mean, I know young kids right now who say, I don't have any money to go to college and the military will give me a great education. And that's really, it's a complete lie. It's a total lie.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought that up. When we were staying at Gene's place in Bremerton, I'm losing track. Tacoma. When we were in Tacoma at our host's place, there was a young man, 23, that was staying there, DJ. Interesting guy, and he's had an interesting journey in his life, but his family, it sounded from listening to him, you know, it's all been a military background, and so far he's resisted that. He's kind of just doing his own thing, and you think, wow, it's amazing that he even broke out of that mold. But in the background, he was saying to us, you know, he says, well, you know, if I join the military, I can be my own person, and, you know, I can learn whatever it is I want to learn, and they'll put me through all this. He just couldn't quite see that, you know, if he goes down that track, I don't think he's going to be his own person. But that's the image that he has in his mind, and that's easy to understand, because all you'd have to do is watch some of the ads that are put out there to do, you know, join the whatever, Navy or the Army or whatever, and mm-hmm. and they make it sound like, you know, wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, Goethe wrote 206 years ago, none are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they are free. And that's most Americans, completely enslaved in this culture and falsely believing they are free.
Right.
Yeah. And just one other story too, just with regards to, you know, as you're saying, Pauline, the obedience of the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a few, you know, decades ago, it wasn't such a military police presence. And I was just reading an article in the last week and a half online, and here's this, you know, a retired 80-year-old retired, I think he was a professor or whatever, you know, at home doing whatever you do as an 80-year-old professor retired, and cops busted into his house and shot him dead in his bed, and he wasn't doing anything wrong. They just thought, you know, they got the wrong house, and they thought there's some sort of, you know, nefarious activity going on at this house. And so here's this 80-year-old retired man minding his own business, and he's dead. And so those kind of stories get out there, and the general population probably thinks, man, I don't think I want to be going out of line too far, because
mm-hmm.
They shoot first and ask questions later, it seems, mm-hmm. in this country.
I've got nothing to hide. Let them follow me. Let them search me. Let them, you know, whatever. I don't know. I'm innocent. You're innocent until proven guilty by the bullet of a cop or an unjust law. I think, how about we play a song right now?
Yeah,
I'm
we
going
need one.
This right. Well, so this first song was something that I wrote almost immediately. I mean, I got home from hearing Guy's message the very first time I heard it when he came out here to visit 2 years ago, and I went home just shattered. And I always turn to my guitar and my music to help process things that bother me. And I sat down and I wrote this song, and it's really a song for my children, you know, because they are, to me, like the most precious thing in my life. And I can't imagine, you know, them going extinct and not having anyone remember them and, you know, going into whatever happens to our molecules when we die, you know, even like, today, if somebody died, you'd still have someone left behind to remember you.
Mm-hmm.
But to just that, just getting the fact that no one is going to be there to remember you or to sing a dirge for you or to bring flowers to your grave for all eternity. And that just, that wrecked me. Absolutely wrecked me. And I went home and I wrote At the End of Time. And this is At the End of Time that I wrote 2 years ago. Standing at the end of time, trying to make this rhyme, succeeding poorly, failing fantastically. The world in our hands, we had the world at our feet. Hubris brought it down, hubris brought it all
we're starlight, we're stardust, and we'll return to that place we all come from. We're starlight, we're stardust, and we'll return to that place we all come from. And we'll wonder where we've been. We won't remember anything, and I won't remember you or the feel of your skin or the look of your smile or the songs you'd sing. But I'd do it all again. Yes, I would do it all again. I'd do it all again just to be with you. Just to be with you.
Beautiful song, Pauline.
Thanks.
Nice. Well, we can't talk now because we're going to get all teary-eyed.
I know.
It's going to be the shortest show ever.
And that's our show for today. I was getting choked up listening to it because, you know, it is for my children. Let me do a quick tune in to the station. I'm Pauline Schneider with Guy McPherson and Paul Marcotte. This is Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. So, yeah, Guy, how does that song make you feel hearing that?
Well, it's interesting. You know, different people respond differently, and the response of an individual changes over time as well. So I had a few people in the audience last night who were also in the audience when I presented at the same location 14 or 15 months ago. And they all came up afterwards and said that the message was far better. Even though it's essentially the same information and the same message, my delivery was better. And they were truly taking my message to heart. One person said that last year didn't really affect her much, but this one really, really slammed it home for her. Mm-hmm. And another guy came up with his partner, and he said, I'm on fire. I'm living since I came across your message. This is great. And his partner turns to him, and she says, he's right. He's on fire. He's burning me up. This is a couple in their, I'd say, in their mid-60s. And they were, he especially, was just doing everything with great passion. This is really nice to hear that sort of thing. Other people are sad, of course, that initially most people are sort of overwhelmed by the message if they manage to take it in.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect the majority of people don't really take it in very well. They just... Maybe they can accept it intellectually, but emotionally and psychologically, it's just a bit of a difficult step. So they're nodding their heads, but then after the presentation, they're bargaining. What if mm-hmm. we do this? What if we do that? What about right. solar panels? On and on and on it goes. You know how that goes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just talking with people, you hear the same things pretty much all the time.
Right.
Well, if I can just add, you know, because Guy's presentation has changed significantly over time, and so there's the science part of it, and then there's the, you know, what do we do now kind of thing, or how are you going to act going forward? And you can tell the people in the crowd that understand where we're at because of the type of questions that they pose to Guy, which is certainly not into the, you know, not denialist type questions. They're just trying to figure out how to they can live their life from here going forward. So yeah, you pretty well tell where people are at by the questions that they ask, and certainly as an observer in all these rooms.
Having a little hard time hearing you, Paul. There's something going on with the...
Okay, guy's playing with his telephone. Can you hear me now?
Yes, thanks.
Okay, so... I know, I got to be watching him all the time. But anyway, I'm sure
he's trying to check his email and Facebook. And
yeah, he just went over to the fridge to get the last tub of ice cream out of there as well. But anyway, the point I was going to make is that I've had the good fortune of being in some of these rooms where I can get a good look at the crowd, as was the case last night. And you just watch the faces, and you can tell pretty well who's getting it and who's not getting it just by the looks on their faces. So mm-hmm. it's an interesting observation.
Mm-hmm. So that's my next segment, which is I really wanted to talk to you both about this, really a couple of things happening recently in the last week. First, we had the Pope decide to come out of the closet as an environmentalist. And then we have, this new study that confirms that we're in the sixth mass extinction without a doubt. And, I was just wondering, how do you think that might change your message, Guy, or your presentation, or how people take it?
Well, it has already changed my presentation. I've included that link in my presentations, that a little snippet from it anyway. Since it came out, the day it came out was the 19th of this mm-hmm. month, so just 4 days ago. I've delivered a couple of presentations since then and included it within the presentation. It certainly makes it more difficult for the deniers of abrupt climate change to continue denying, because now it's in the gold standard of science, the refereed journal literature, mm-hmm. as usual, way late. The recognition of reality within the scientific community always comes considerably later than it does for people who are looking at their windows. Mm-hmm. But it's just one more step along the way, I guess, in which case the media are catching up, the science is catching up with the reality that's been locked in place for quite a long time.
Which was your latest YouTube that we posted just this morning.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I understand that it's a difficult message to absorb, that we're in the midst of this, and not only that, but that we caused it. Mm-hmm. And here I'm not pointing the finger at any individual, but mm-hmm. this culture, this society, is what has driven us to the brink, starting a really long time ago, arguably 1750 or 1850, but mm-hmm. long before we showed up in any event. But we're all captive of the system, and mm-hmm. and the system is the source of the predicament. Rather than trying to abandon the system, most mm-hmm. people act like it's the best thing going.
Yeah.
And so it's too late now to make the profound changes we would have needed to make many years ago. And people get that. People who are listening actually do understand mm-hmm. that where we are, and that there's no escape for us. At least they get it intellectually.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I just think it's so funny that, well, not funny, I don't know if that's the correct word. Amazing that back in the 1870s, Svante Arrhenius predicted global warming just by using basic math and the understanding of thermodynamics, which I don't think we really teach those things in our schools today. Or maybe we missed a window where all the senators and congressmen who are in office now, they must have missed that window of science and math because I guess they don't get it. But apparently the Pope gets it, since he's a scientist, right?
Yeah, the Pope gets it. Well, that's all we... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Pauline.
No, I just think it's sort of, why did he wait so long?
I don't know. It seems to be the talk of the town since we got here. We kind of got a copy yeah. of the encyclical dropped on our lap as soon as we walked in the door here. And there were people brought that up at the talk last night as well. And it's, you know, it's to me, it's just more of the same, right? Here, it's you know, oh, good, somebody's going to solve the problem for us now. This time it's the Pope,
right?
You know,
right.
And if there's a billion Catholics in the world, I guess they think, oh, well, that's a good start. But, you know, it's just more of the same. It's like we were at the first talk in Vancouver, and right near the end, one of the people in the crowd said, all we need to do is put solar panels on the moon and we'll solve the problem. So, you know, they'll come up with all kinds of harebrained ideas as to how we can solve this problem. But as Guy has said, it's not a problem, it's a predicament. So here we are, and none of these things are really going to make any difference, I don't think.
Right. And last night, in response to that question, I didn't answer it well at all. I simply pointed out that if the Pope were serious, he would abandon civilization and promote all of us doing the same. But then he's going to have to give up his gold chains. And he also would stop encouraging people to procreate. And I don't see either of those coming out in the encyclical. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a big part of the issue to me. So it's just a distraction. What I should have said was, if you're asking that question, you don't get it, and the Pope doesn't either.
Yeah, right.
Because this stuff is irreversible at this point. You know, just talking about it is not the same as fixing it. And basically he's pointing out that we have issues here. Well, as you pointed out, Pauline, Svante Arrhenius published the first scientific paper on the topic of we have an issue here in April of 1896. He went on to win the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for unrelated work, but he was predicting global average temperature rise as a result of burning fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are.
And here we are.
Do you want to hear my take on the Pope?
Please.
I have a very cute little... If I could draw as well as I can imagine this, I picture the Pope on his little lifeboat, surrounded by all his 0.5 percenters. And he's got a megaphone, and he's yelling at us, and we're on the Titanic, which is sinking. Yes, the Titanic is the metaphor for the Earth. And he's yelling at us, and he's saying, you need to get off the Titanic. You need to build yourself some lifeboats, or take over my lifeboat, or you should have built a better ship, or divest. Maybe you can divest. Divest from the building of the Titanic. You know, but none of it helps. You know, he's fine.
Yeah.
He's going to have water. He's going to have food. He's going to be in his bunker. He's not, you know, he's not going to be sinking in the Arctic North.
No, exactly.
Oh, but well, there's probably not going to be any icebergs in the Arctic North this September, right?
It's sounding like that. And
right.
I guess, you know, this is probably going out there a bit as well, but it seems like, now I've just lost my train of thought. I don't even know where I was going to go. A guy's going to have to fill in with this one. What are we going to say about the Pope? Something. Oh, I know what I was going to say. It just came back to me. I think he's as much of the establishment as any other person that's in the establishment. And I would think that if he was really going to be doing something radical, he probably wouldn't be around too much longer as a Pope. I don't know, but that's my first take on it. So,
well, yeah, the last Pope who got really radical, who pointed out some serious predicaments we're in, didn't last as a Pope or as a human being for very much longer.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, and again, it's too late. It's too late for even the Pope to fix it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's too late for God to fix it at this point, which I think is an excellent lead-in to the next song there, Pauline.
Oh, that's great. Well, this song is the closing title song that... we used in the Going Dark documentary, and it was written by my daughter many years ago, Christina Schneider, when she was 18, and she had a it's a very personal song to her, and she really hates it when I play it, because she's gone on to different things, and she has a different music style now, but she's incredibly talented, and really, I thought it fit beautifully, and spoke to how, you know, we have killed God, basically, you know, our Mother Earth. And she called the song Stripped, and I like to call it I've Killed God. But this is her song, Stripped, Christina Schneider.
Stripped,
started the holy process, and death has smelled the life I made. Every stretch of my solemn beauty, caressed by the devil, bled out of this world. I have killed God. I have killed God. Stripped of my divinity, I see it is all that was holy. The only godly force I've replaced with pornography.
Another beautiful song. Thanks for sharing that, Pauline, and also to Christina, whether she wanted to hear it or not.
Thank you. She's amazing, and she's still, you know, she's still writing, and she's just touring and doing amazing gigs in the city. She's fantastic. You can look her up if you want to hear more of her music. C. E. Schneider. She's pretty spectacular. She's got some music on SoundCloud. Anyway, so she's fantastic. We are getting a huge storm here, and it's completely green outside. I'm actually a little terrified. The rain sheets, I can't see past the tree outside my window. So, if my line goes dead, you know, it's been nice knowing everyone. What a way to go.
We'll wrap up the show for you, not to worry.
I trust you to take the reins in that situation.
After
can
all,
you hear that?
We only have a few minutes to go. Yes,
yeah,
I did hear
thunder,
that.
Yes.
It's God moving furniture, as my mother used to say.
Yeah, that's quite
but
amazing.
But he's really pissed about it today.
Well, it's just the opposite out here. It's just brown grass, and it's dry as whatever. And I think I saw something online yesterday that, you know, in California, they're talking about all these wildfires all the way up and down the coast and up in Alaska and wherever. I think they've got 1,100 wildfires in California, which is more than double what they normally have at this time of year. And it's barely, summer has barely started. So,
right. And the same in Alaska, huge wildfire season already underway. They're badly stressed out, overtaxed with respect to the ability to send people out to try to put them out and monitor them.
Crash, bang, boom from New York. Woo.
But But yeah, I wrote many years ago that wildfires were another one of the self-reinforcing feedback loops, that it becomes warmer and drier, especially in the world's boreal forests, and that causes increased incidence and size of wildfires, which push more carbon up into the atmosphere. Interestingly, among the people who disparage my work are a couple of pretty well-known podcasters, and they concluded that this was a negative feedback, because once we burn all the forests down, then we won't be able to burn them up anymore and cause carbon to go into the atmosphere.
Wow.
They said that with their out loud voices to refute the information I present.
We are definitely the rationalizing animal.
Yes, indeed.
That's amazing.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's just incredible the level of rationalizing people are willing to go to just to support their financial agendas, really. That's really all it is.
Absolutely, yeah. It just goes on and on until it won't go on anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Oh, it's incredible. Well, Guy, you know, with all of this new information coming out there, that's going to be so loud. Oh, really, really, really scared
right
now. Okay, I'm unplugging my computer. I'm on battery power now.
Oh, my.
Okay. It's coming closer. Did you guys ever see The Poltergeist? You remember when they would count between the thunder, the lightning bolts and the thunderbolts to find out how close it was coming?
Yeah, I'm not much of a movie person.
You need to start watching movies. The world's almost over. You got to get some in there.
He hasn't even seen The Big Lebowski. He's missing out.
Oh, man. Oh, Lord.
No, I want Paul to indulge us with another story. He first met you, Pauline, in Mount Shasta almost 2 years ago. And he met me a short time before that. I'm not even sure how long. So I want Paul to tell us when you first heard about me and my message and what was about the message that resonated with you.
Well, let's see. I've been following this. I think I've mentioned this story before, but I read a book in 2005, The Weathermakers by Tim Flannery, an Australian, and that sort of opened the door, the floodgates, to get onto the what's going on with the climate. And then that just opened up all these other doors. You know, then you're talking climate, and then you're talking, you know, peak oil and government and all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. So by the time I came across Guy's message, I'm guessing about 2010, and it all made perfect sense to me at that point in time because I'd just been doing all this research. And so, I totally accepted the message pretty well from the get-go. And I try to remind myself of that every once in a while because people, if they just come from zero to Guy McPherson in one fell swoop, it's hard to understand what's going on. And I try to, empathize with people that they really might not have a grasp of the whole situation, the seriousness of it. So the denial phase is quite understandable for most people. So yeah, I guess that's where I've come from. And it seems like as time goes by now, it's all, like this recent journal literature to do with the extinction, all the evidence is coming out now, so Guy is not proven to be as radical as maybe a lot of people thought he was initially.
True. And maybe this will also help those scientists who can't openly speak anymore for fear of not getting their work published. Guy, what do you think about that?
Yeah, maybe so. Natalia Shikova has had her work disparaged, and her ability to publish has been seriously crimped by modelers in the United States, two in particular who have a certain sway of power over the journal process. So that's unfortunate, but, science is a conservative enterprise. Academic science is even more conservative. So getting information in the published referee literature is a grindingly slow process. It's good to see it getting out, albeit too little too late. But at least it's getting out so that people understand what's happening, even while it's happening. So better late than never, maybe?
Yeah. Well, you know, at least it gives people a chance to find closure with relationships, get off the hamster wheel, leave their workstations, and do something that they've always wanted to do.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's great liberation associated with my message. You can actually throw off the shackles of culture. Mm-hmm. And the example I used last night, I think for the first time, was you get on the hamster wheel and you start spinning. You know, the definition of civilization, one of them anyway, is must go faster. And so you go faster and faster in your hamster wheel, and pretty soon it's just a blur. You don't even see the bars anymore. You're in a cell and you don't see the bars. And maybe you could slow down a little bit, and then you could see the bars, and then at some point you might even, recognizing the bars, step off the hamster wheel and start doing something different than this culture drives you to do.
Right. That's our show for today.
Wow. Where did the time go? Time flies when you're
survived.
On a radio.
I survived. And I haven't been struck by lightning. There was a big bolt that hit right outside here. So everything was sparked up in here and blue, so it was pretty terrifying.
Whoa. Well, it's really good that you had the opportunity to stay with us right to the end here, Pauline. And thank you
so much for
hosting the show and chatting with the both of us.
My pleasure. Thank you for making the time. And I know you got to jump in a car and get on the road now and drive to your next location. So drive safely, safe journeys.
Thank you.
Our driver, Stephen, has just arrived. So he's punctual, which is wonderful.
And you can, people want to find out more about the venues, the events, go to GuyMcPherson.com and check out coming events, and there will be a link there to everything that's going on, that's coming. So thank you, and that's our show. Next week, Cindy Sheehan will be on. That's very exciting, and I'm really excited. So please remember to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last, on the Progressive Radio Network, and you can join our Facebook group, I'm still lightning struck here. And you can post questions if you want us to address. And go to his website, GuyMcPherson.com. And you can check out his long essay there, which is always getting longer and scarier. So until next time, please remember that dominant culture has been very clever. But in the end,
nature bats last.
Mother Nature, she's gonna get you.